Welcome to Dazer Update for September 8th, 2024. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Jenra Vittorio.
And yeah, we've got not a big week of news. This is fairly light, but we do still have some interesting stuff to talk about. We got some layoffs at a few places, some sales stuff going on, some dates and delays. Biggest news I'll talk about here in a bit involving Concord, but there is some other interesting stuff here. But yeah, before we get to the news, we'll talk about what we've been playing, and I'll kick it off here. Been playing a bunch of Astrobot. I finished the first two worlds, and gotten everything in it, I believe. And yeah, it's an incredibly tight and polished platformer. I've had a lot of fun so far. Very much feels a lot like what the other Astrobot games have been. Similar premise of the ship kind of getting parts taken from it by aliens that has caused the ship to crash on a planet. And in the process, your Astrobot kind of takes the DualSense ship to fly around these galaxies to take on these various levels to beat them, and eventually the boss that gets you the one of the parts of the PS5 returned. So I've gotten two of those done. Yeah, it's partly a big platformer as well as a celebration of the 30th anniversary of the PlayStation.
Yep.
There's a lot of guest characters in this. I have not unlocked the point where I can change the Astrobot's look. I believe that is going to be the next thing I unlock, I believe. That's the stuff you unlock through the art pieces that you get that will unlock new things for you to do. You know, the first one you get is the gacha machine for each of the licensed characters that you have unlocked. You can spend, you know, 100 coins to pull out essentially like their setting, their little figurine that then enhances sort of where they hang out on the home base around the PS5. And yeah, that includes a lot of Sony properties as well as third party stuff. And there are a few that are exclusively on that base area, as there's, I think, four areas you unlock as you go through the game. And as you collect more of the Astrobots, you get more areas and more things you can do to around there, things you unlock and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's a very well-made game, very kind of a big game, it feels like. The maps are relatively about the same size as what was in Astro's Playroom, maybe a bit bigger than that in some of them. But you unlock a lot of side levels that are kind of where the challenge is at, because the main ones are not too hard for anything. But it's where you get to some of these side ones that is kind of where you start dealing with the more tricky mechanics that they introduce. And yeah, in each of the areas, you get one area after you beat the boss that is themed around one of the properties they feature. If you've done the extra trophies in Astro's Playroom, I believe you get at least some hints of what some of that stuff might be. So yeah, you also get to see some really cool stuff, because they theme those areas around the games that they have done. I'm not going to spoil what any of them are, but you get some special items for that stuff, as well as just unlocking more licensed characters, and yeah, just get to do some overall really cool stuff there. And yeah, it's just it's a very good game. Look forward to playing some more of this. Definitely one of the best 3D platformers I've played in quite a while. So there's that. But yeah, that's Astrobot. Let's see. Also been playing a Star Trucker. This is on Xbox and PC. It is also on Game Pass. It is a space trucking sim, where you are sort of a rookie that is sort of starting your career, I guess, doing this stuff. You start with an initial like tutorial job you kind of learn about how to patch up your ship with when dings happen, and kind of how to deliver your first trailer of stuff and how that all works, and then how to find new jobs, that kind of stuff, which is fairly simple for what it is. Though the thing that I think makes this game maybe worse off is that it has a bunch of difficulty settings, and the normal one ends up being very high maintenance in the way that it is designed. So you're dealing a lot with managing batteries for your different systems, as well as air filters and some other stuff that you need to keep some of these systems going, and as well as patching up your ship. It's a lot more vulnerable, and it felt like I had to spend a lot of time refilling these, or putting these batteries into the slots, and then disposing of the old batteries, which usually just keep them in a box and sell them when you get to a merchant. But it felt like every mission you had to place stuff, so you had to be constantly visiting shops to buy more batteries, which they only had a specific amount on hand at a time. So you're kind of very limited in that, kind of making it a more frantic and tense experience, which is not why I play stuff like American Truck Simulator or Euro Truck Simulator. Those are kind of just the fun of the trip and all that. And this does not have that on the default difficulty. You have to go to either the easy, or what I did is I started a new save on a custom difficulty, which then lets you check a bunch of the options for the various systems in the game. I turned most of them all the way down so that it would not be so heavy on the maintenance. Sort of every single job I would finish, I would have to go then shop and get batteries and all that stuff. So that makes it a much more relaxed game.
Mm-hmm.
That I think is a better experience, but that's kind of where I'm at. I've done, I did a few jobs on the normal difficulty, and then I restarted, and that's been going better. I've been going to some different places. Maybe the other knocks I have is that the readability of the kind of roads that they have set up, like they set up basically a series of gates to kind of show you clear paths that don't have debris in them or shouldn't have debris in them. Mm-hmm. And it's not always easy to read where they're at, because the map doesn't show you a map of that specific area. You get kind of just an overview map of the different hubs that you can go to. So that's like a thing like I would have liked a top-down view to be like, oh, this is how I get to this exit, versus just, you know, driving straight towards it through the debris and hoping I don't hit anything. That kind of stuff. But I'm figuring some of that stuff out. You kind of need to just drive around a bunch, which then leads to, you know, wasting gas and all that, which is tougher to do on that normal difficulty that it kind of hints that you should start at. I do recommend playing on the easier difficulties and maybe working your way up, though I also think they shouldn't have difficulties and just have those as options for you to set, which I kind of find to be a little bit disappointing, because you know, like the American and Euro Truck games just don't have difficulties. You just have, they might have preset difficulties, like it'll set all the settings to things, but you can change them at any point and make it easier or tougher if you want for that kind of stuff. But here, that's not as much of a thing. But you do have like CB radios. You're hearing, you know, specific characters talking throughout, and you have some points where you can answer. And as you get XP and level up your license, you can spend them to unlock more types of jobs, or more like harder versions of certain types of jobs, that kind of stuff. And along with that comes story quests, story jobs that some of those characters on the radio will ask you to do for that. So that can be, I guess, kind of like a tutorial-ish kind of thing of them introducing you to these new types of jobs that you get, you unlock. So that can be pretty neat. There's a radio, but it feels like it has like four or five songs on it, so there's not much variety at all, and there's no internet radio station or anything like that. Maybe the PC version has some option for using your own music, but I'm playing on Xbox, so there's nothing but those like four or five songs. So they're all pretty good, but not good enough to hear, you know, constantly repeats. So I've turned that off and just listen to whatever else I've got on, you know, Netflix or whatever I'm having on while I'm playing that game. So there's that. And then like they make the manual with all the details on how things work is hidden in a, you know, like a glove compartment, but isn't part of the menus. It's not like you can refer to it whenever you're out of your seat. That's kind of an issue. You have to get back into the seat to mess with any of the stuff on your dashboard or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of annoying that you can't just like have it on you at all times to refer to. And I guess the other one is that the horn is just a specific lever on your dashboard. So you can't just hit the horn whenever you're doing stuff. So that's kind of annoying. And yeah, that's kind of about it. I think the other thing is I think you should have the FOV up higher than what it's set at, because you end up kind of having this tunnel vision of seeing out of your dashboard or out of your windows. Once you open it up, you can kind of see a little more to your sides, give you a little better view of what's going on around you. Though you do have cameras, side view cameras, but there's also those screens have other data that might be interesting to you, as well as a backup camera, which you dock into specific places to go shopping and whatnot, which is a little bit tough at first, but once you get used to it, it's not too bad. For that, you're just basically having this circle on your camera that then, you know, as you're backing up closer, you're lining it up with the one on the place you're going to dock with, and then once you're close enough, you hit a switch to attach it. So nothing too complicated, but yeah, it works out pretty well. So yeah, that's Star Trekker. Pretty good game, but a little rough around the edges. That hopefully they maybe do some more updates and fix it up a bit. But yeah, still pretty good for what it is, and that's been that. And the last game I've been playing is Concord. With the news that is going on, I played a bunch more before it got shut down. Did a stream for that and put a video up on our YouTube of the archive of that. So that was fun still, though I kind of wish that they had up the XP multiplier, just made it like 100 times or something like that. Just let people kind of unlock as much of the game as they could if they weren't going to just unlock it all for everybody. Just unlock all the cosmetics and such for people, make it easier, and as well as people trying to get the platinum trophies, which ended up with people going into the round-based mode rivalry, and just people were just jumping off the sides of the map to their death to end it as fast as possible, because that gives out a higher XP than the regular matches. So that was sort of the point of the game, where that the matchmaking for that mode was working a lot faster than it had ever been, because more people wanted in just to try to grind out the platinum trophy as fast as possible. Which I didn't get very close to. I had like 11 or 12 trophies. It required me to play a ton of it. So yeah, it's a very rare platinum there for people. But yeah, that game was still a lot of fun. Unfortunately, just did not jive with a lot of people or interest a lot of people, but we'll talk more about that a little bit later. But yeah, so that's it for me. Brandon, what have you been doing?
Well, as for me, I am playing the Kingdom Hearts collection. Specifically, I'm playing Kingdom Hearts 2. And, you know, like I said last time, I had forgotten how long that whole section with Roxas was, but ultimately I kind of kind of learned to appreciate it, because the game is kind of trying to catch you up on some of the plot elements that you might have forgotten between the gaps between the first and second games. And there was a considerable one, for those who don't know. But there was also the fact that, you know, it was helping you some of the stuff that happened with some of the other, the other Kingdom Hearts game that had come out in the meantime that was on the, I think it was on the DS. But yeah, that game is still a lot of fun. Graphically, it still mostly holds up. The only issue is, and this was actually a thing for when the games were originally released, people noticed. Characters in this game essentially have two types of animation cycles. They have the ones that are clearly done through, you know, like actual motion capture animation, and there's like fully animated faces and everything. And then there's the other one that's all pre-programmed, where when they're talking, their mouths go through like a preset number of animations. And it's very noticeable, and it's not really an issue except for the fact that there are times when they will switch back and forth between like the same scene. So it can be a little bit off, but right now I have I already finished The Land of the Dragons. You know, that's the Mulan world. I'm now in Beast Castle and dealing with that. But yeah, other than that, because Astrobot came out this week, I decided it was finally time to actually play Astro's Playroom, which is more or less the precursor to that game. And I know it's crazy thinking I would have played this by now, considering the thing comes preloaded on every PS5, but I hadn't. I had completely ignored it. And then I finally decided to actually start playing it. And I found it incredibly enjoyable and charming and sweet and actually a lot of fun. It's not a terribly big game. It's mostly a, you know, a graphics demo more than anything, but it is an incredibly well-made one, and it kind of functions as like a sort of playable museum of the Sony PlayStation through its entire history. And so, yeah, that is a lot of fun. Highly recommend, you know, anyone who has had that on their PS5 and has not messed with it to just give it a shot, because it is incredibly fun. And I'm almost certainly going to get the actual Astrobot game as soon as I'm, you know, done with that. But and on top of all that, I'm also still pecking away at the DLC for CrossCode. I'm actually in the main dungeon for the DLC, which is not easy at like anything. It's considerably more difficult than a lot of the other dungeons I've come across. But yeah, that's about it for me. So Dan Reb, what about you?
Yeah, it's going to be a bunch of stuff from me, but the game that I played most of the time last week, which I didn't really talk about, was Ace Attorney Investigations Collection. So yeah, the review is up on Smashpad. I gave it a 4 out of 5. And yeah, so the thing about this collection is that it pretty much completes all of the Ace Attorney collection as far as like being able to buy it on a modern platform. You know, last year, the 3DS eShop closed down, which caused pretty much like people to, you know, if you didn't already have the Ace Attorney games, if you didn't get it there, then there's no way else you could have gotten them. So now that they've released the original trilogy a few years ago, they released the Great Ace Attorney Chronicles 2 years ago, and then earlier this year they released the Apollo Justice Collection. These were the last two left. Granted, there's still Phoenix Wright versus Professor Layton. A lot of fans don't consider that to be part of the series, although I did think it was a good game. So, you know, I think that should be mentioned. But yeah, the thing with this one is that it stars Miles Edgeworth, who, you know, many fans will say is like better than Phoenix in just about any way, especially as far as his character development goes. And the other key thing is that the second game in this two-game collection never came out in the United States. It was never localized. So yeah, we finally got a chance to try that out. When the original game came out in 2010, I gave that game a 3.5. I pretty much stood by it. Like, the main thing that really separated it from the rest of the series, aside from being able to use Edgeworth, was the fact that all of the action was done in third person. You know, you could actually walk around the crime scenes and investigate things one by one there, whereas in previous games, when you were using Phoenix Wright, Apollo Justice, or whoever it may be, it was always through menus. Now, these menus still exist, but, you know, just the ability to, like, walk around and at the same time, like, see all of the animations definitely added, like, a more dynamic feel to the game, and that's definitely something I appreciate. But, like, as for things that I wasn't that fond of, you're using Miles Edgeworth, but you were a prosecutor, but you never actually prosecuted in court. And I thought, like, that was a huge missed opportunity. Just because, like, throughout the entire Ace Attorney series, you are a defense attorney. Even, like, one of the games allows you to use Miles Edgeworth for part of the chapter as a defense attorney. And I was like, you know what? I want to be the prosecutor for once. And, like, yeah, this gives you that opportunity, but it doesn't allow you to do it in court, which, you know, I thought is definitely a miss. That being said, like, there's a lot of returning characters here. The story is definitely awesome. There's 5 episodes in the first game that are all intertwined by one case that, you know, happened like several years ago. And it involves international policies, which, you know, you can't try someone in an American court for something they did in Asia and things like that. And it's really all about finding the truth. You know, when you first run into Miles Edgeworth in the original game, he learned a lot from his mentor, Manfred von Karma, who was also notorious for forging evidence. And, you know, that's something that Miles didn't want to do. And yeah, he becomes like an awesome person because of that. And yeah, the first game was really solid, really giving you an idea of like how he is, how he does his work. But it's really the second game that really makes this collection really worth it. I'd also say a buyer beware there. The first game, which should take around like 15 to 18 hours, whereas the second game is closer to 30. You know, it's almost double the length of the original game. And what the original game did rough, in my opinion, was the last chapter. The last chapter is easily like over 6 to 8 hours. And I was like, wow, this thing is way long. And in the second game, pretty much every chapter reaches that length, which leads to its length. But that being said, as far as the plot devices used in Ace Attorney Investigations 2, they definitely raise the stakes a little bit. You know, I don't want to say too much for those who haven't tried it yet, or, you know, they want to get into it. But there's a case where, you know, it's possible that Miles Edgeworth could lose his prosecutor's badge. There's a case where you actually use both him and his dad. And, like, yeah, if you're familiar with the lore, his dad was a defense attorney who lost his life in an elevator, and he was actually, like, murdered by his mentor. You know, I'm spoiling, like, the original game, but, yeah, that's basically what it goes over. So, yeah, definitely an awesome collection. The graphics are definitely spot on for me. The game is on PS4, PC, and Switch. But, you know, also after playing Emeo, for Famicom Detective Club, like, I feel like that game does more visually than this one, but, you know, being able to run around in third person is cool, and they actually updated all the little graphics there, so all of the chibis are no longer sprite based, they're actually hand-drawn, and they all look absolutely terrific. They look just as awesome as their usual close-ups do when they're actually interacting with other characters. And yeah, it's definitely a fun one. Just note that it is a little on the long side, and I wouldn't recommend that you binge it. Or if you do binge it, you know, binge a game at a time. Don't try to do both at the same time or anywhere along those lines, because, you know, the story can get convoluted and it becomes hard to follow as a result. But yeah, another game I've been playing is Paper Ghost Stories Third Eye Open. This game is also another narrative-based title, and this one is absolutely beautiful. Like, if you were to pull up any sort of a trailer or footage of this game, it pretty much looks like an active storybook, but the lighting is also done a very nice way. You know, it's easy to compare the visual style to something like Paper Mario, but, you know, Paper Mario has that polished look to it where everything is like the same, whereas Paper Ghost Stories looks like things were, you know, literally taken out of a book and pasted somewhere else. And I think it really gives it a nice distinctive style. I'm only 2 chapters into the game so far. There's 11 in the game. And so far you use this little girl who has an imaginary friend, or rather she meets a ghost that no one else sees. So everyone just assumes that she has an imaginary friend. The story and the narrative is really tied around a lot of Southeast Asian concepts, primarily in Malaysia. So a lot of the words are going to be in broken English with some Malaysian mixed in. But it does an interesting thing where all of the pieces of dialogue, whenever you see a little bit of Malaysian or Chinese, they actually describe what those words mean at the bottom. And, you know, it's very visible, and it definitely showcases the culture involved in this game. And yeah, so far it's really just about a girl with a very strict dad. And yeah, that's something I also you know, relate to, being Asian American myself. So I'm enjoying that so far. But you know, let's bring it back to the star of the show. Chris already talked about it. You know, Brandon's gonna eventually play it, but when he gets there, Astro Bot, you know, it's amazing so far. It's probably like near the top of my game of the year. My game of the year so far is Trails Through Daybreak. But yeah, there is no amount of time where Astro Bot doesn't make me smile, except for when it gets really hard. Like Chris, I've also completely finished the first 2 galaxies, along with the bonuses that come with it. The second galaxy unlocks like these triangle levels. And when I say a triangle, I mean like the actual shape, like the button on the PlayStation. And these levels remind me of the quote-unquote secret levels from Super Mario Sunshine, where they're really just platforming challenges. You know, the one that I spent the most amount of time on was this armadillo challenge, where you have to, like, you know, you knock out the armadillo, all of a sudden you turn into a ball, and then you're just bouncing on a ball and just, like, running through, you're running through spikes and all that. And yeah, the platforming is tough. Like, you're in the universe, you have to avoid all these bad things. You can't make the wrong move or else you'll die. And yeah, just like just being able to see all of the different bots that you can unlock. Like a big thing, especially with Astro's Playroom, was really, you know, celebrating like PlayStation fandom. Whereas this, it takes it to the next level. Like, you're definitely celebrating PlayStation fandom, but it also extends to, you know, various third-party games that also might be more on the PlayStation side. You know, it was something that I was unfortunately spoiled on a few days ago, but I've seen bots that were actually Kiryu from Yakuza. I've seen Joker from Persona. And I haven't unlocked Kiryu yet. I think that's my next level, but I've unlocked Joker, and I don't, like Chris, I don't have the ability to change costumes yet, if that's even a thing, but I did see a costume thing that gets there. So basically the way it works is every level has around 7 bots to unlock, and a couple of those bots usually end up being like a special, what they call a VIP bot, which are typically just bots based on like other games. And along with that, you have puzzle pieces to collect, as well as sometimes you'll find a portal, and this portal is pretty much just a second way to complete the level. And then when you actually find these portals, not only do you exit that level, but you end up opening up a new world in what's called the Lost Galaxy, which are actually just harder levels in the game. So that's definitely cool. There's a whole lot of things to like for both younger and older players, or, you know, just people who are more experienced and less experienced with platform games. And definitely really enjoying what I'm playing so far. It feels very polished. The music is fantastic. You know, Astro is absolutely cute. Being able to see the game parody other games has been awesome so far. You know, Chris just talked a little bit about God of War, but like, yeah, the special thing with that one is you get to use Kratos' axe the exact same way that he uses it. Like, you can throw it at people, they'll freeze them, and then you got to press R2 again to just have it come back. And it's like, wow, I'm playing like a cutesy version of God of War, and that's something I definitely really appreciate. And there's a whole bunch of other things that tie into it as well. Like, in that God of War level, there's these the green birds that you might remember from, you know, the last 2 God of War games. And while, you know, it's not essential to kill them all, if you do, you get a trophy for it. So yeah, like, nothing in this game feels like a waste of time. If anything, it's really making me want to just 100% everything before I move on. The main way that I've been playing it is I go through every level within a galaxy, and then, you know, I finish them, and then I go back to it before the galaxy is over. And that's all pretty cool. But yeah, the main reason why, like, he's collecting these bots and these puzzle pieces is to really, you know, fix up the hub world, which is just the crash site. And it sort of feels like Pikmin in a way, because, you know, you're going to find all these various obstacles, and the only way to actually move through is to have enough bots to help you. So you'll maybe find something where, oh, you need 20 bots to form a rope here so you can get over to the other side of the platform, and things like that. So it's really cool finding ways to fix things up that way. You know, Chris talked about the gachapon machine where you can unlock different parts of the setting for the third party characters that you come across in the game. And it's really enjoyable so far. I can't wait to get back into it when we're done here. And we're in that part of the year where things are getting crazy. There are two other games that I'm playing that I'm also loving that I can't talk about yet, but, you know, we'll get to one of them, you know, next week or the week after. But yeah, that's about it for me.
Yeah, the only other thing I have to say about Astrobot is I think it's the weakest Sony game in a while in terms of settings and options. There's a lot of great music in this game, and I really wish I could kind of just turn it up without turning everything else up at the same time. The accessibility options are pretty, there's like three of them. It's just like you can use the sticks instead of just the gyro for that stuff. I think there's one more for some UI stuff, and then one more for, I forget what the third one's for, but yeah, and like the other options are just minimal stuff. Nothing for like audio settings for, you know, music and sound effects and that kind of stuff. And there's one particularly great song. It just comes out of nowhere. It's called Papa Tree, and it's just a very stupid song.
Yeah.
I have the deluxe edition with the soundtrack, and it's like 8.5 minutes long.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I've listened to that song too. I actually just played through that level last night, and I don't know if you got the trophy, but you get a trophy for continuing to spray him in the face, and the trophy is called, like, What's He Saying? And at the same time, it's like, I don't understand a word of what that tree is saying, but it's definitely a pretty funky song to have in there. And, you know, it's funny you bring up a lot of the accessibility issues. You know, a lot of other publications talking about Astrobot have talked about how this is pretty much a Nintendo game not made by Nintendo, but, like, yeah, when you think about, you know, the polish and just how fun it is, but at the same time talk about the lack of accessibility issues, yeah, that's Nintendo.
Yeah. No way to remap buttons or stuff like that.
Yeah.
Things that could use, I think it seems like there are some people having save issues if their system crashes, because it doesn't save the way you think it would. So yeah, when you're done with the game, it's best to kind of just put out to the menus and then close it from the dashboard, versus, you know, other ways, just assuming it's been saving. That's the other thing. I assume they'll fix that up, make it better. But yeah, for now, it's a really good package. But yeah, let's get to some news. First up here, new time for some Game Pass stuff. Yeah, we're kind of in a weird slow time. So what's available now? Let's see, Star Trekker, I mentioned that earlier, for console and PC. There's also Age of Mythology Retold. It's on PC and Xbox Series X and S. It's, you know, basically a RTS strategy game. So,
yep.
Made it a bit better, though. I saw some people were annoyed that one of the DLCs is just a bunch of avatars for the game. Like pictures, not actual game content. So, yeah, that's a weird thing. Let's see. Also available now, Expedition's a MudRunner game. So that's their new kind of a scientific expedition kind of game. Similar to what MudRunner and SnowRunner were, but you're not really delivering stuff so much. Just trying to get to places to do research missions and set up camp and do all that kind of stuff. So that looks neat. I'll probably check that one out this week. Also coming, let's see, coming up. Yeah, September 11th, the Riders Republic for console and PC. That's the multiplayer sports game that Ubisoft made a couple years ago. That kind of came and went. And then let's see, for the 17th, Train Sim World 5 for console and PC, another train sim game. So there's more of that to check out. So there you go. Some decent stuff there. Let's see. Yeah, that's it. For news, we got a new No Man's Sky update.
Yep.
Following up the one that just came out a few weeks ago. But this seems part of that, as it's called Aquarius. And the main thing it's adding is fishing. They've added fishing to the game so that you can catch fish. It's not necessarily, seems like it's a bespoke mode versus you catching like the various aquatic creatures you see in your water. It seems like they have bespoke fish that can be caught. Yeah, I thought they had a name for them. Yeah, here they are. A reef eel, jungle redfin, marrow shark, fields dartfish, and a caustic urchin are the ones that are mentioned here. There might be others as well, but it's a lot of that kind of stuff. And it's kind of funny seeing some of the shots of this, because the fishing rod is like three times as tall as the people. It's very, very silly. But you get an exoskiff that you can use to go out into the water a little further out.
Mm-hmm.
For that stuff, also has its own cold storage inventory for that. So yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah, there's rare catches. You got a fishing log you're trying to complete with the need for specialist baits and legendary fish to catch. So
mm-hmm.
There's all that kind of stuff for the game, as well as some messages in bottles, it seems. So yeah, they're doing a lot of weird stuff. There's also automated fish traps you can leave out. There's an Aquarius expedition. That's a big quest to go catch fish across the galaxy. So that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
More cooking recipes. Yeah, bespoke fishing records screen, which seems to show Sean's username here. Don Murray's username is Sean Poopy Pants.
Mm-hmm.
Is for these screenshots. That's weird, but okay. There's a deep sea diving suit. Yeah, a bunch of different rigs for the fishing rods.
Mm.
Yeah, posters, new tentacle figurine to put in your ship, flight pack stuff, and a bunch of other things like that. So, yeah, that's really cool.
Mm.
Kind of adding a whole big part of this game to it. So, there you go. Yeah, then we'll get to this is the biggest news of the week, that Sony announced on Monday that they were shutting down Concord this past Friday. Gonna refund it everybody, at least everybody that bought digitally. People that bought retail copies, you know, had to go through their retailer of choice. Though anybody that did that through PlayStation Direct also getting a refund automatically, and deciding to kind of react to the game's kind of poor start to just shut it down is a weird way to go. Kind of makes me wonder if they had seen like the pre-order numbers after the betas, and like we're actually thinking to put it on like PlayStation Plus to kind of get it out there in front of more people. Maybe get word of mouth going that way. Like a lot of people expected. And once they didn't do that for launch, they might do that for October when the first season would be starting. Kind of just keep it going for a bit to get to that point. And once the seasonal stuff was kind of going to go, get more people in there so that the, you know, word of mouth could be more positive than it has been. But unfortunately, like none of that stuff seemed to happen. They do mention here, let's see, while we determine the best path ahead, Concord sales will cease immediately, and we'll begin to offer a full refund for all gamers who purchase the game for PS5 or PC. We'll keep you updated, and thank you all again to all the free gunners who joined us in the Concord Galaxy. Kind of, we determine the best path ahead. That kind of makes it seem like they may be trying to see if they can rework this game a bit, maybe do another pass on character design and art style and all that, rethink all that stuff and see what maybe a free-to-play version of this would look like. But I don't know. I don't know that I have that kind of expectation for this. At this point, it kind of seems like the well's been poisoned. I don't know how long it would take to rework this into like a completely different IP, just a different universe, essentially, because this one is tainted at this point by negative reception.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's sad. I feel for the dead. I also feel for all the people that enjoyed it for as few as they were. But yeah.
It's definitely a rough situation all around. I mean, like, you know, Chris also, you know, played it. And, you know, out of what you've played so far, Chris, like, you don't think it's a bad game, right?
No, I would have said if it would have kept going, I would maybe have it on my Game of the Year list, maybe. But obviously at 2 weeks, it's kind of very hard to have played enough to have it stand up to other games. But
yeah. From what I've played too, I don't think it's a bad game at all. In fact, like, it's actually a really good as far as its shooting. It definitely feels well polished. The strategies are there if you know how to, you know, navigate your way through hero shooters. And like, for what it's worth, like, with the time that I spent playing it, it was really fun. And like, a lot of the problems that I have with like what happened here don't really stem from anything that the developers really did. Like, you know, when we go back to when it was unveiled at that state of play, you know, what the main complaints were the fact that, oh, they look like bargain Guardians of the Galaxy. Well, I mean, like, that's not really like anyone's problem, but yeah, I can definitely understand why it would make people not want to play it. My critique when it was first unveiled was that when it was first shown, I thought it would actually be a, you know, a single player campaign shooter. Obviously that's not what it turned out to be. And if like there was any sort of pivot that Sony or Firewalk could have made, it would have been to like really look at, you know, a lot of the feedback from that point of view. You know, I know that there's a lot of people complaining about, you know, the diversity and like, you know, DEI stuff like going goes on. I'm not even going to address that. But like, you know, my issue is just like the way things were communicated with this game, you know, even going back to the beta, you know, which happened, you know, a few weeks ago. The beta didn't get the numbers that people were looking for. And I think one of the biggest reasons why was because it also launched alongside the beta for Marvel Rivals. And Marvel Rivals is getting like great reviews up and down. You know, everyone's calling it, you know, the next Overwatch, which is obviously what, you know, this game is trying to be. And like, yeah, it's just been rough. And instead of like continuing to work on it some more, Sony went ahead and released it. And, you know, we've seen it in Gamescom, like they're going to be on that new Amazon show and they've announced that they're not going to cancel that episode. They made a whole controller for it. And then, yeah, like, you know, just go back to last year. Sony spent, you know, a lot of money to acquire this developer. And this was the game that they were working on for the last 8 years, which, you know, 8 years ago was also when Overwatch came out. So, you know, it's tough to really see like who to blame here. But like the main thing is like, this kind of thing is really surprising. You know, we've seen a lot of games like, you know, fail out the gate. You know, the most recent, I mean, in my opinion, being Suicide Squad Kill Justice League, right? You know, people were complaining just about for about everything there. And this game didn't even last 12 days. So, yeah, like you would hope that, you know, Sony or, you know, PlayStation is going to try to figure out how to retool everything. But, you know, as Chris mentioned, like, I feel for the devs. I don't see a situation in which a lot of these people keep their jobs. And obviously that's been a problem for the last, you know, year and a half now. And yeah, like it's just tough to see where to go from here. Like the fact that they've already, you know, refunded everyone to the best of their ability and, you know, pretty much recalled it in all physical spaces is just absolutely surprising, because this is something that you don't see. Like, again, like PlayStation put millions of dollars into this. They even made a controller, which means this was supposed to be a big deal. And if this doesn't come back as Concord, what does it come back as? And I don't know. It's just weird to see, and it's wild just considering the fact that, you know, Sony is admitting that they lost a lot of money. But, like, you know, what do you do from there? And if they get rid of the staff, that wouldn't be surprising. And if they didn't, that also would be surprising. So it's a weird situation to be.
Yeah, it's a weird situation. I imagine they're not going to worry about the jobs for the time being. Just kind of have everybody working on what the next step would be, whether it's, you know, a new project they might have that they could pitch, or just some new version of Concord, whatever it could be. But yeah, I think the jobs will be fine for the time being, because this is all PlayStation management's issue, not the devs. So yeah, I think we'll just kind of see them go quiet for a while. And Astrobot kind of comes out at the right time to kind of make this a non-issue for the time being. They got a big new shiny thing for people to check out. So there you go on that. Let's see. Level 5 Vision 2024 is happening in a few weeks here, on September 24th. Technical Level 5 Vision 2024 to the world's children. As their new events, they are expected to announce some new stuff. Though I would say maybe they should announce that they have finished games. That's been their big issue so far in this relaunch of their development. Seems like they will probably have a date for Inazuma 11 Victory Road, because they've been doing some beta stuff on Switch and PlayStation and PC for that. So that very well be something that they get out. We know Fantasy Life I, The Girl Who Steals Time, was delayed from coming out October 10th to an unannounced date. And then they also have Deca Police and Professor Layton in the New World of Steam that are also in the works. The latter of which is on a Nintendo published, or I think it's primarily going to be on Nintendo's platform, so that's probably going to be waiting on whenever Nintendo's ready for them to announce a date. But they do suppose they have another game in the works, so we'll see how that stuff goes. Though I know they did put out a game recently. Let me see if I can figure out which one it was. It was a mech game. Let's see. Okay, then it's not on here. Okay. But yeah, they did have a game that came out a while ago. And the fact that I can't find it. Megaton Musashi Wired. I think that came out a while ago. Obviously was not a big deal, so probably not one that keeps them afloat for a while, but these other ones probably do better for them. But yeah, hopefully they got some dates that they can actually hit here for this event. So yeah, there you go. And speaking of games needing a date, R-Type Tactics 1 and 2 Cosmos has been delayed again. It's been delayed to 2025 from supposedly being out later this year. So Granzella is kind of pulling that back again. That's for PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC at some point. So hopefully that hits, because that was a pretty neat game on the PSP, or Terra games. So hopefully they get this one right for all these consoles. So yeah, there you go. But yeah, let's get to some industry news. We had another game that was supposed to be out here. It's out next week for Xbox that has been delayed because of this continued issue that's been popping up lately for developers that cannot get the back-end systems working, particularly when it comes to like creating pages for their games and getting the developer accounts all set up and all that stuff that you need to get set up on the back end to actually release a game. The developers of Haak, H-A-A-K, on Steam basically said they were working on the game for Xbox for a good 14 months and could not get a hold of a Microsoft employee that could reliably help them fix their issue. And I think in the process they shut down, so there's nobody there to really release the game. They were also working on the PlayStation version, but just kind of ran out of time and money for that stuff, so that kind of very much backfired for them. And then this one involves Inotria, The Last Song, a Souls-like set in Italy, based around Italian folklore. That's out the 15th or the 17th. So just over a week from now. That will be coming out in time for PlayStation and PlayStation 5 and PC. But the Xbox version has been indefinitely delayed. Over the platform submission process for what the developer calls a lack of communication from Microsoft about getting the issues fixed that has caused them to miss their release dates that they were planning on. As the CEO of Giamma Games says here, we've got Xbox Series X and S versions ready. We can't proceed with submission and release. I spent a lot of money for porting, and they decided to ignore us. But it seems like Microsoft has finally gotten a hold of them after being radio silent, so that's good. Though it shouldn't require them to get on social media and talk to people in the games media to get this get their issues noted, but something's going on this back end for smaller devs that is causing these kind of issues.
Yeah,
I mean, for all intents and purposes, this is an internal problem that we shouldn't even know about. So the fact that, Giamma is, complaining to games media about it shows that this is definitely a weakness at Xbox that we always thought was a problem. And now that we know that it is, it's just weird to see. Like, if I was Xbox, I would definitely be listening to as many people as possible in regards to getting games on my platform. And, it doesn't matter, like, what kind of game it is or how good or bad it is. You want to have games on your platform as possible. And if you're not doing your job and making sure those pages are available, it's stupid. The fact that, Phil Spencer had to go up and talk about it is embarrassing. And, if I was working in that department, I'd be ashamed, too. So, like, this is dumb. Hopefully they fix it soon. And, if Giamma went ahead and, like, talked about it, I'm sure it's an issue for plenty of other developers. And it's pretty lame to see. Inotria is a game that, I tried out at Summer Game Fest. It's not my cup of tea. It's pure on Soulsborne kind of stuff. But, I'm sure that the Xbox, audience would definitely welcome it. But, if it's going to be delayed because of this kind of thing, then they got to look from within and fix it.
Yeah. That seems to be kind of the issues. These are kind of bugs and issues that have been in their system for a long time that they've been able to kind of get around by just, putting a bunch of people on it, but it seems like lately they have been having less of those people to get a hold of devs and work them through their issues. That has just been causing a number of developers issues of late. So that's disappointing to see, but also makes you wonder how much of their attention is on this kind of stuff. Do you think they'd have a lot of people working on dev accounts and making sure they have as good of an experience as possible? And obviously we're not seeing that many games getting delayed on Xbox, but maybe the ones that aren't even getting announced on Xbox are because of that stuff as well. This Capcom news came out, that they are finally bringing the two Capcom collections, the Marvel vs. Capcom Fighting Collection Arcade Classics, Capcom Fighting Collection 2, over to Xbox for next year, which are going to be on the Xbox One versions. It seems like this was largely due to some sort of similar tech issue. As they mentioned in this announcement, we are excited to announce that after technical discussions with our partners at Microsoft, these two games will be releasing on Xbox One. Both Xbox One versions arrive in 2025, so please stay tuned for more information, which seems like technical discussions. Interesting way to frame it. I've seen people suggest it's related to the MT framework, so I don't know how that necessarily makes it a big issue, but they definitely seem to have some sort of concern there that Microsoft was not addressing, at least at the point that they were announcing these games.
Mm-hmm.
So it does kind of make them look like the Xbox versions are lesser versions, and to a degree they are, because they are not going to be there at launch. Mm-hmm. For either of these, the Marvel vs. Capcom collection is out this week on the 12th on Switch, PC, and PlayStation 4. And the Fighting Collection 2 is out on PS4, Switch, and PC next year. Though no idea if the Xbox version will be able to catch up and be ready on time or not, but yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just some more issues, and if Capcom is having issues on Xbox with whatever this technicality is, that's not a great sign, it seems.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, I mean, these games should have been announced on Xbox when they were announced. Like, you know, the fact that they were showing up on a Nintendo Direct when, you know, the Switch is not known for any good netcode, and, you know, it's coming to PlayStation and not Xbox is just a bad look. And, yeah, you know, again, hopefully they try to figure out these things, because they shouldn't be happening.
Yeah. But yeah, as, you know, speaking of games not coming to Xbox, there's Black Myth Wukong.
Mm-hmm.
That I believe is supposed to be coming at some point, but for now is PS5 and PC at the moment.
Yep.
It seems like it has surpassed 18 million sales in just over 2 weeks.
Yeah.
It looks like their biggest game yet for the for PC and PS5. It's one of their biggest ones for a while.
Mm-hmm.
For this, they are expecting to put out an expansion, as they are starting to work on that now that it's done so well. So good on them. So yeah, it's also not great because the developers are well known to have a shitty toxic work culture. So
yep.
That's been the one sour note, though, which causes people to be like, well, how can those be issues of it? You know, the pushback, like, how can there be pushback if it sold 18 million? It's like, it doesn't mean it affects the sales. It just means there's plenty of people talking about it that won't buy the game or check it out.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. That being said, like, you know, 18 million is definitely nothing to sneeze at. At the same time, I believe a majority of their sales is in China, and that's actually a huge deal too, because they don't buy a lot of games there. So, you know, we in the business side of things, they always talk about, you know, taking over the Chinese market, and nobody has really been able to do it effectively. And the funny thing is, we're seeing a lot of Chinese companies find success elsewhere. So the fact that, you know, we have a Chinese company actually be successful in China, on top of, you know, getting like the reviews that they're getting and the sale that they're getting elsewhere, is pretty good. That being said, the toxic workplace stuff, it's just slippery slope. So
I think it was like 80-90% of the sales were out of China, which is wild.
Yeah. Well, you have to understand is that the vast majority, and I really do mean the vast majority, of the video game industry in China is predominantly mobile phone games and not the good ones.
Yeah. Like, that being said, like, this is a $60, $70 game. So I think that makes it all the more impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there was those weirdly draconian rules they had about people streaming with the game that.
Yeah. For particular influencers, not necessarily streamers or reviewers.
Mm-hmm.
I was just like, yeah, this seems like it maybe comes out of rules you might get in China, but out in the West, it was like a lot of French and European people that were getting this.
Yeah, which makes me think, I have the suspicion that someone high up in that company has party ties or is getting funding from the party itself, which makes me think that there's this, you know, these rules that go along with it. So, you know, that's the rumor anyway. But
yeah,
that's not me trying to sound sinister or anything. It's just if you do business in China and you're Chinese, there's like a 6-to-1 chance that you're probably in some way related to the party somehow. But yeah, you know, on the one hand, yeah, I am glad that Chinese developers are like actually becoming a major part of the industry now. And it's not all just MoHoYo, which, I mean, that's not an insult to them. It's just they pretty much dominated it for years at this point. But just wish it wasn't these guys, because they're kind of assholes.
Yeah. But yeah, that's that news. Let's see. Next up here, yeah, as I mentioned, PlayStation is starting their 30-year celebration.
Mm-hmm.
I've been, yeah, the PS1 launched in Japan, I think September 9th, or September 1994. So they have been around for quite a while. They're starting their celebration, partly with Astrobot being kind of a big part of that.
Mm-hmm.
As that has a ton of references and bots and such from various properties.
Mm-hmm.
But they did announce a bunch of other stuff they're working on. This is not everything, but this is the stuff they're announcing right now.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. There's My First GT. This holiday, look forward to a free trial version designed to attract diverse players of all skill levels to the globally acclaimed Gran Turismo 7. This upcoming release will include some of the favorite cars, tracks, and race events that evoke the nostalgia and excitement of the very first GT experience.
Mm.
I got for more details on My First GT, available to all PS5 and PS4 players this holiday.
Mm.
So that could be cool. I imagine that would mean that they would get cars and tracks and such that were in the original game.
Mm-hmm.
As sort of a trial thing, which could be pretty cool. Especially if they could find a way to get like a PS1 filter over the game.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of make it look like that. But we'll see more about that later this year. They're putting up a bunch more games on various streaming platforms in a collaboration with Sony Music. Each month from October through January, released for the first time on Spotify, a set of digital soundtracks from fan favorite PlayStation franchises. You'll also be able to stream them from Spotify or purchase them on various other music storefronts. So that'd be cool. The ones mentioned here, God of War 1 and 2 and Ghost of Sparta, Twisted Metal, Starhawk, and Unit 13. So a weird little mix of games there, but that'd be cool. They also have a special curated PlayStation 30th anniversary playlist on Spotify, so you can check that out. Let's see, Shapes of Play, they announced a new collection of products. I don't, these things look weird, but there's Shapes of Play Battle, which is like ghost style pieces in the shape of the PlayStation icons, the square, triangle, circle, X, kind of thing. Yeah, we can challenge a friend to line up four different shapes of the same color on the board to win. Yeah, that's a version of Go. So there's that. Shapes of Play Create. These are kind of a bunch of magnetic blocks that you can put together to make various shapes, and I assume also the face buttons for that. And there's Shapes of Play Recharge. These look like squeeze balls, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But in the various shapes of the controller as a triangle. Yeah, one's a cube, a sphere, a triangular prism, and it's kind of like a little X fuzzy thing. I don't know. But that's neat, but also I think it's, I want to say I saw the prices are pretty expensive for those things, so I don't know if those would be ones to get just on a whim.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see if they got the $7.99 or $79.99 for the great one.
Mm-hmm.
Where the price is at here?
Mm-hmm.
$44.99 for the battle one, the Go board. That's a 4x4 board you get as well. And Recharge is $34.99. So that's pretty expensive for that. What else is mentioned here? They're going to be doing a free online multiplayer weekend in esports tournaments on the weekend of September 21st and 22nd.
Yeah.
So you can play your multiplayer games for free there without PS Plus.
Mm.
Let's see. Yeah, they say they'll have some more stuff going on here for that later this year. So we'll see if there's some more interesting stuff. But yeah, nothing too huge there, but some neat stuff either way. Mm. But yeah, let's get to our next one here. Oppo Games, the makers of Risk of Rain 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
Seem to essentially be done, as they have announced that they have, or many of their people have been hired by Valve,
mm-hmm.
So they can work on something. Working, as they say, just they'll be working on game development at Valve. So who knows what sort of project they might be working on or anything, but seems like it's enough for them to kind of cancel the game they were working on. That was Project Codename Snail, and kind of put the company in limbo for the time being.
Yeah.
Which is a shame, but hopefully they get to make something cool over at Valve. Because I forget what the other developer that's, I think it was the people that made Firewatch, had their studio get acquired by Valve, and they're like, oh, we're going to still make cool stuff.
Yeah.
And then that never happened.
Mm-hmm.
Was it Campo Santo? I think it was. Yeah, in the Valley of Gods, which has been on hold since 2019, and I assume it'll never happen again. Because, had a head writer that went to work on Half-Life Alyx. And they've just been working on Valve stuff, so yeah, they might end up just being part of the machine at Valve. Which, if that's what they want to do, that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Risk of Rain is now under control of Gearbox, the second game getting PS5 and Xbox Series X and S versions recently. That seems like are in a bit of rush shape with the update they put out and the new expansion. That seemed to be pretty buggy in ways that got people annoyed. So that part of their past is not in great shape, but hopefully the devs are okay. But yeah, we got some bad news here. The developers of the Until Dawn remake, Ballistic Moon, have announced layoffs here. Let's see. They have confirmed a number of employees have been laid off. They had a post on LinkedIn. They had struggled to navigate the complex challenges facing the game industry, saying we at Ballistic Moon are confronted with some difficult realities. It is with deep red and heavy heart that we must make tough decisions to significantly scale down our team to secure the future of the studio. It comes after our development of Until Dawn for PS5 and PS4, or PS5 and PC. We want to express our sincere gratitude to every team member for their hard work, dedication, and unwavering commitment to Ballistic Moon. So yeah, they're still focused on supporting the launch of Until Dawn and working on whatever's next. I believe I've read that they've been having problems getting funding for the next project they were wanting to work on. And as we know, kind of the landscape right now for funding for games is not great at all. Especially if you're an independent studio, which Ballistic Moon is. Once you do finish a project like Until Dawn, you're kind of at the whim of whatever your next project is going to be. Mm-hmm. And it seems like that is still kind of in limbo enough that they have had to make the decision to lay people off for the time being until they have funding and the project secured for their next couple of years, hopefully. Sad news for them. There. And yeah, our last one here, Rocksteady is laying off people.
Yep.
Took a while for that as people knew that Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League did not do that well. On Monday, their QA team was effectively cut in half from 33 to 15. Other departments were affected, though at the time that this was coming out, so the total number is unclear. junior and tenured staff from when those let go. So just kind of calling a lot of people there just to trim the payroll, I guess, wages for the time being until they have something else in the works for WB. Because, yeah, just supporting Suicide Squad for the year of content that they have promised is does not require the full team at all. So that is the some sad news here, but I think they'll ultimately be okay because Rocksteady is a good team there, but they need a project that kind of really gets people excited. Suicide Squad was one that, from the time it was being announced, had pretty much negative reception about it. Nobody really giving it the benefit of the doubt, and caused them to have to delay the game further to kind of keep reworking it as best they could before they had to put it out and kind of just be done with it. So, yeah, there you go. Some sad news there, but we're just now getting to the holiday season, and that's going to be happening more and more, I assume. So, yeah, there you go. But yeah, I think that is going to do it here for the show this week. Thank you to Brandon and Danner for joining.
Always.
We'll be back next week with plenty of more stuff to talk about. Because I think we'll get more time with Astrobot in there, so we'll have some more to talk about that. I'm trying to see what other stuff is coming out this week. Let me see. There we go. This week has, let's see. Yeah, Warhammer 40,000 Space Marine is out this week. So there's that. There's Elsie, nice little indie game for PS5, Switch, and PC. There's Elder Scrolls Castles is finally officially out, despite it being on Android. Like two years ago, I played it and was like, I kind of see what they're going for. They're trying to make Fallout Shelter for Elder Scrolls, and it doesn't work. Or at least it didn't have a hook to it like Fallout Shelter did. But maybe that's changed. Who knows? Satisfactory hits 1.0 here on the 10th. So that'll be cool. Yara's Rising is finally out on the 10th. The Crossy Road Castle is out on the 11th. Dragon Quest Monsters The Dark Prince is out on PC and mobile. Caravan Sandwich is out on PS5, Switch, and PC. Fabledom is out PS5, Xbox, and Switch. Grapple Dogs Cosmic Canines is out on Xbox, Switch, and PC. Let's see, Lollipop Chainsaw Repop. No, that's the... Oh, no, yeah, that was pushed up to the 12th. So that's out. Let's see. Yeah, the Marvel vs. Capcom Fighting Collection Arcade Classics is out this week. Pico Park 2 is out this week on Xbox and PC. Let's see. Test Drive Unlimited Solar Crown for PS5, Xbox, and PC. That seems like it's been a disaster for the early access stuff. Because apparently their servers just haven't been working much, if at all, for the people that have paid more money to play it early. Which seems like a bad situation to be in, which makes sense when I tried to play the demo during the Steam Next Fest and the servers were down, were unplayable. So in fact, the full game that people are actively paying for isn't working is real bad. Let's see. UFL is supposed to be out, that free-to-play soccer game.
Yeah.
PS5 and the Xbox is out this week on the 12th, and Wild Bastards is also out. Let's see. Funko Fusion's out for the people excited to spend $50 on that. And that seems like mostly it. So, yeah, bunch of stuff. But yeah, that's gonna be it. Yeah, if you enjoy the show, for let friends and family know, they should check out the podcast and select strangers who are also excited about some of these games coming out finally. As the big fall season is continuing, a bunch of games coming out here this month. So yeah, we'll see see more of that stuff. But yeah, thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead. We will see you all next time. Have a good one.